Ventures and Adventures in Topography.
Essentially, topography is really nothing more than the detailed study of place, an area or region or town, etc.
A show that takes the listener on a wayward topographical ramble around the margins of London.
The walker at the edges of the city, the liminal figure who is not so conceptual in his practice.
Drawing on a rich tradition of old walking guides, maps, literature and ephemera, Nick Papadimitriou and John Rogers embark on a series of suburban perambulations and outer circle rambles.
I like those pre-moulded concrete pails that run along the river here, with the mosses and lichens growing on them. For me, such things are psychedelic.
Adventures and Adventures in Topography on Resonance 104.4 FM. With me, John Rogers, and my co-host blushing at me here, Nick Papadimitriou.
Good evening, John.
How are you, Nick?
A little flummoxed after our walk the other day. You dragged me through a landscape I was completely unfamiliar with, and all I remember are narrow, satanic streets, memories seeping out of walls, and then later on turning corners onto Finsbury Borough, council blocks and strange squares with trees growing in them. I have no real sense of where we went, and you're going to have to guide me tonight because it was cognitive overload if ever I've experienced it.
I have achieved my dream to help you experience cognitive overload in the landscape and in a London landscape that you as a natural born Londoner were, you know, as you say, were quite lost in. That was the aim of the walk.
Well, in that you definitely succeeded. It always surprises me how little even a native Londoner can know about the city they live in. And there are places in London that I've not only never visited, but I've never even heard of. However, I have managed to at least learn something about Finsbury and about Clerkenwell.
Yeah, Finsbury and Clerkenwell, or as we're calling it in this show, we're calling it Finsbury and Pentonville.
I stand corrected.
Finsbury and Pentonville, although it is better known as, you would say, Clerkenwell and Islington. One of the reasons I want to take you on this walk and take you, the listeners, with us and discuss as much as we can in the time that we have about the area is it is quite a well-known part of London. I think a lot of people, if you ask them to say something about Islington or Clerkenwell, they probably could come up with some sort of association, couldn't they, Nick? What do you think the most common things? I think New Labour, Clerkenwell loft apartments, nightclubs, Smithfield Market. And so this was a aim to try and sort of go beyond that somehow and to look at a different narrative for that area.
That's right. And we carried out on-the-hoof archaeology with our focus being springs and wells. But that really served just as a trigger for us to try and find something substantial and new to say about the landscape. We also shadowed the River Fleet all the way northwards to just south of King's Cross St Pancras Station, and then ended up high, high, high up on Pentonville.
We did, high up on the Penton Mound. We were partly guided in this stroll through the arbours of the spas and pleasure grounds of Finsbury and Pentonville by a wonderful book called Old London's Spas, Baths and Wells by S.P. Sunderland. I have the leather-bound book in my hand, and it has numerous engravings in the book with tissue paper over them, which is always very satisfying, isn't it?
It is indeed, yes.
And this book really was a survey of all the water sources in London from recorded time up to the present. It was published in 1915. And so particularly looking at the old springs and old wells, also Roman baths, and the spas, and I like the spas and the spurious spas, as he calls them, that grew up around the city and around the edge of London. Clerkenwell, Finsbury, Pentonville, whatever you want to call it, was particularly rich in springs, and still is actually, and became famous for them in the 18th and 19th century. So here is a reading from Sunderland, about Bagnage Wells, one of the spas that we did visit on our walk. So here is Hayley Le Pain reading from Old London Spaths, Baths and Wells by S.P. Sunderland with music by Europa 51.
The Bagnage Wells was situated in Bagnage Wells Road, now King's Cross Road, near the Fleet River and near Bagnage House, considered to be one of the country houses of Nell Gwynn. The wells formerly belonged to the Benedictine nunnery of St. Mary's, Clerkenwell, and have therefore some claim to have been holy waters. Some writers consider one was identical with the Radwell of Stow, which I have mentioned under springs and wells of minor importance. It is considered that of old, one well was called Blessed Mary's Well, altered after the Reformation to Black Mary's Well, although the term Black Mary is supposed by some writers to refer not to the Virgin Mary, but to a black woman named Mary who used to dispense the waters at a well in the vicinity. There is no record of any medicinal use of the waters until 1760. Two wells behind the house in 1757 were tested, and one found to be chalybeate, and the other a strong purgative water. Pumps were erected in a pavilion, gardens were laid out, tea-drinking arbours and seats provided by the side of the River Fleet, which ran through the grounds, and for about 50 years the place became popular amongst all classes of society. The charge for drinking the waters was 3 pence for each person. After various vicissitudes, the wells were gradually monopolised by the lower grades of society, for whose delectation 3-penny concerts were instituted, and who enjoyed their pipes and beer in the bowers, and played bowls or 9 pins, whilst their wives and children regaled themselves on muffins and tea, or syllabub and cakes.
Reading there by Hayden Le Pain and music from Europa 51, talking about Bagnage Wells, famously associated with Nell Gwynn. And Nick's looking at me blankly there. About, I did cut Bagnage Wells out of the field recording. It's quite Bagnage Wells is one of the few spas that is actually marked. If you went looking for it, you would find a plaque on the side of what I think is some sort of sheltered housing on King's Cross Road. And there's an engraving on the wall there marking the spot.
And hidden by a Perspex bus stop. Very difficult to take photographs of, I noticed.
It's like they did it deliberately, isn't it?
I was outraged. Yeah. Outraged.
It's a very long stretch of road. They could have put that bus stop absolutely anywhere and then stuck it right in front of that very historic plaque.
Is it not an example of the suppression of the springs and wells that seems to be an ongoing theme in the researches that we've carried out around this series and generally in our writing and in our exploration? There seems to be some kind of civic distaste about springs and wells, not only because they became sewers, open sewers, and were therefore conduited, but one wonders sometimes whether there's not a kind of a almost Christian or maybe technological repression of something that's seen as being vital and alive. I don't think I'm being too fanciful there. It seems plausible.
I think you're right. It's a suppression of our pagan instincts, because many of these springs would have at one point been places of worship if there were people around. I think Peter Ackroyd speculates that the springs at the top of Pentonville Road, or the Penton Mound, as it's referred to by E.O. Gordon, was a place of worship, because I think there was interestingly, there were mazes in the gardens at White Conduit House. And I think another one, Penny's Folly, which is opposite the White Conduit House on the site, which is now the Elizabeth Garrett Anderson School. And mazes were associated with pagan places of pagan worship and temples.
Perhaps there's a feeling that the paganism gives over too easily to debauchery, given the reputation that some of the pleasure gardens built around spas and wells accumulated over the years.
If only it would. If only it would. I reckon that is why Michelle Obama visited the Elizabeth Garrett Anderson School, as she did a couple of years ago, because she was visiting the site of Penny's Folly. We visited, I think, in a short space of time, about 10 wells, springs, spas, pleasure gardens in that walk the other night. Astonishing, really. It's lovely to think of the image of that. That's one of those things that it's not just dry local history, is it, we're doing here. It's a kind of a reimagining and a reframing of an area. And if you see that hillside before it was built up, I mean, Pentonville wasn't developed until the 1770s when they started to build it. And even there, it was at the bottom end, Penton Place, near King's Cross. Before that, there were great fields of meadows. Saxifrage was particularly abundant. With views across London, and there would have been these pleasure grounds with balloon rides and circuses and archery and rackets and orchestras and dancing on the hillsides of what is now sort of, you know, a fairly busy thoroughfare.
The Penton Mound is usually attributed as having London clay on top of it, but I would have thought the presence of saxifrage would indicate gravelly soil. Saxifrage or stone crop type plants often grow on very dry and stony soil.
Well, I think we should take you out on this walk with us on the first leg, where we met at Chancery Lane station, and we headed up through the old London borough of Finsbury to the London Spa. So here we are the other night, out in the dark and the cold.
So another water reference is Amwell Street. We're going to cut across Amwell Street. Amwell being the place where the new river rises, isn't it?
That's correct.
And now, what I love here, Merlin Street now. We're going down Merlin Street, and there was a pub down here, actually, called Merlin's Cave. And it's to do with the mythology of this, the hill here that Amwell Street rises up. It's the whole mythology you'll find in Elizabeth Gordon's Prehistoric London.
Merlin's Cave sounds like an underground club from the 1960s.
You would have gone to Merlin's Cave. It was a real prog rock club, apparently, in the 70s.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, that's right. And there was a belief that Merlin had a cave in this Penton Mound, is what some people refer. Well, E.O. Gordon refers to it. It's also in Aykroyd's London, and Peter and Ian Sinclair references it, I think, in...
But where does E.O. Gordon get her material from?
Well, she says she gets it from the sort of the bardic tradition, the Welsh bardic tradition.
That sounds suitably vague, doesn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly, yeah, that's right. But
hasn't her claims about the Penton Mound been pretty much discredited? I remember you saying once that...
I don't think people have even given it enough sort of credibility to even bother to discredit them, I think. In the past.
But you were quite taken by it. I'm not trying to embarrass you on air.
Yeah, I'm still quite taken. I still am.
So we're less interested in truth and more interested in the power and energy of myths, even if we're fairly sure that they're not correct.
So we're on Wilmington Square now. And Wilmington
So this is Wilmington Square. I've been here. I didn't realise it was Wilmington Square. Now, according to my researches this afternoon, slender though they were, this was the site of something called the Ducking Pond, and my first thought was that it was where they ducked or swam witches, but actually it's to do with ducks. Yes, yeah. Was it some kind of decoy or something like
that?
But
they'd hunt ducks with spaniels here. There literally was duck hunting here. But then what did it become?
Well, the rather pleasant little urban green space that we see now.
I think in between it being used for hunting ducks and becoming this lovely Georgian square, it was the London Spa. It was one of the sort of more prominent pleasure grounds, which I think was developed, I think it says sort of in the 1690s. Someone discovered the Chalabet Spring, I think a landlord of a local pub. I mean, there was a pub over there, actually. And he exploited the waters. I like the way it says the poor weren't charged to drink the waters here, but they were charged for beer. So they had these health resorts that sold as much beer as they did anything else. Just here is where we have St. Chad's Well. There we go, St. Chad's Place, just shy of King's Cross, behind this travel lodge, down here.
St. Chad is the patron saint of wells.
This garden here, pleasure ground, it's difficult to imagine it, isn't it? It's just this little concrete alleyway that runs between quite low brick buildings. They had a circus here, amongst the many other sort of distractions and attractions they had. Great performances, a massive circus here, you know, with like high wire and tumblers, clowns and animals, you know. Right here.
Well, we're clearly looking down into the swampy wastes of the River Fleet, also known as King's Cross St Pancras.
Definitely a swampy waste.
And there used to be a swamp down there called the Brill on the site of the hotel by St Pancras.
All right.
Is it the Midland Hotel?
Yeah. We've got one place to mark off.
Would this be the White Conduit?
This is the White Conduit. This is it, Nick. This is our final spring pleasure ground. This is the White Conduit, the White Conduit House. This pub, what's it called? What's it called now? Tenore. Sardinian restaurant and bar.
Did you tell me this had an association with cricket?
Well, this is the home of cricket. We stood on...
I do find it hard to believe, I've got to admit.
Yeah, we stood on Barnsbury Road here. Opposite an old London County Council estate. And yeah, this is where cricket started. This is where the first cricket club was here. The cricket club used to play at the back of here. On the ground there was the playground.
Let's go and have a look.
Yeah, it's like an estate and a playground.
So we've got some new residences here on the right-hand side. Yeah. I wonder if the people who live here have any notion that cricket started in this place.
Yeah, it became the MCC. And the new cricket ground they moved to became Lord's. But this is where they used to play originally. Now, the water that rose behind here, there's Cloudsley Street over there.
Right.
And Cloudsley Square. The spring there, which was the conduit, was piped down a wooden conduit to the Charterhouse down in Smithfield.
I think I read about that earlier in Ashton's book. Hence White Conduit.
Hence the White Conduit. This is kind of the end of the walk, Nick.
That's fantastic. Let's sit down and have a cigarette.
You have a cigarette. Let's have a coffee. Let's have a coffee and you can... Oh, no, you can't have a coffee and a cigarette, can you?
I'll have a cigarette and then we'll go and get a coffee.
Okay.
I smoke fast. Lovely. Put it there.
Well, you may have noticed that I played the second field recording first there because I thought, let's go in with the second field recording. It's got all the wells and springs in it, or the most of them, and I mislabeled the file. More relevantly.
I was interested in the idea of St Chad being the patron saint of Wells, because it's also been suggested that St Chad should be declared the patron saint of botched elections. And that's following the 2000 US presidential election in which small ballot papers called Chads were punched out by voters using the voting machines. So St Chad's empire is growing slowly.
Excellent. And he's probably very well at home in the birthplace of New Labour as well there. Where we ended up, actually, there at the White Conduit House, which is a pub, as I mentioned, it's a restaurant, actually, called Tenore. You can see the labelling of the White Conduit above the top of the building. It is about 100 yards from where Tony Blair used to live.
Right.
Bit of trivia.
I was very interested in the land immediately behind the pub that you said was where they played cricket, because it's a distinct plateau.
Yeah.
And I never had any real sense of that area as being so high up. But when we were up there, we could see distinctly around quite a large circuit of the landscape. We could see buildings lower down and various vistas of the city.
Astonishing views. If you carry on along Barnsbury Road, and if we had carried on to the next pleasure ground, or site of the next pleasure ground, you'd have got along Barnsbury Road and you'd have got a view across Barnard Park towards the clock tower, which sits in Caledonian Park.
It would have been from the old cattle market?
It's the old cattle market, which was Copenhagen House, which is quite a famous pleasure garden. I don't know if it had a well or a spring. I don't think it did. But it also became a centre for the, what was it called, the London Corresponding Society, which was like a revolutionary movement in 18th century London. And it's also where there was a rally for the in support of the Tolpoddle Martyrs, hence Tolpoddle Street, which is right next to the White Conduit House.
And of course, just round the corner from Copenhagen Street is Pentonville Prison, a distinct building. I remember walking past it. In 1969, me and my brother went down to Heathrow to photograph some aeroplanes. I was about 11 at the time, he was about 13. And they declared a bus strike that day and we couldn't get back. And we walked all the way from Heathrow to central London, thinking that would be the best route home to Finchley. And I remember then walking up Caledonian Road past the prison at about 3 o'clock in the morning and being horrified by the sight of this large Victorian panoptic prison. That's a very, very strong memory for me.
It should actually be called Barnsby Prison as well, as is pointed out in this lovely book, A Londoner's Own London by Charles G. Harper, published in 1927, is that, you know, Pentonville Prison isn't in Pentonville, it's in Barnsbury. But Pentonville has always had a reputation as being a slightly salubrious suburb, whereas Barnsbury has always had a reputation as being a rather sort of upmarket suburb. And yet, really, Pentonville Prison is right in the heart of Barnsbury.
But if you're in Pentonville Prison, you definitely are in Pentonville Prison, whether it's in Barnsbury or Pentonville.
So we're going to take you back out now. We're at the start of the walk, so you've had the end of the walk, and now you'll have the start of the walk. I think this will probably take us out to the end of the show. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much to Europa 51 and Heidi LePayne. There is a podcast of this show and the other shows available from the Resonance FM website, and you can find all sorts of videos, photographs and blogs on our website, venturesintopography.wordpress.com. So here we are, walking along Saffron Hill towards the spars of Islington and Clerkenwell.
So it's going to be a bit haphazard, the route, Nick, because a lot of these wells and springs that we're going to look at later on in Old Pleasure Grounds are very close to each other. So we'll have to zigzag around a bit and go back on ourselves.
I suspect a fair amount of the route will be near deserted as well, because we're walking through the edges of the city on a Sunday night in winter.
Moving along Saffron Hill now. Saffron Hill was known as Little Italy for a long time.
Why was it called Saffron Hill? Was it where herbs and spices were delivered on the fleet, or...?
It's where saffron was grown in the Middle Ages. There were saffron plantations here.
Ah, right.
And this area became the centre of the Italian community in the sort of like the middle of the 19th century. And it was where a lot of organ grinders set up. A lot of them were skilled craftsmen that came over. And there are a lot of organ grinders here. There's a lovely map in the Camden History Journal of the organ grinders colony that was here. The one ton proudly boasts a Dickens reference, I think. There you go. I know so many pubs in London claim this, but I think it's got a fairly good call, seeing as, you know, Oliver Twist was set at the bottom of Saffron Hill here.
Blood on the window pane.
It's never encouraging, is it?
This is where the city drops its shroud of busy nightlife and culture. Straightens itself out and settles down for hard-nosed business. That's the feeling I get here. There won't be many jokes cracked in the offices along this road.
No, that's right. This street as well also was where one of the most notorious crime gangs of the early 20th century, London, were based and lived, the Sabini Gang.
Operated. I have heard of them, yeah. They have a... They provide routes that extend into criminal life in London right through into the post-war period.
They were the basis for the character Corleone in Brighton Rock.
How interesting.
They used to run the gangs at the racetracks and run protection rackets with the bookmakers. And they were based in this street here. So here we are. This is Coldbath. This is Coldbath Square. And it's got a plaque saying Coldbath Square. It is just a turning in a street, isn't it? Really. So I'm sort of partly being guided here by a book called Old London's Spars, Baths and Wells by S.P. Sutherland. That was really sort of the inspiration for walking around here, looking at old spas and pleasure grounds and baths. And Sutherland says that it was a cold spring which in 1697 was converted into a bath by the owner of the surrounding property. It was the most noted and first about London. So we're just going to find the site of the Clark's Well, which is, you know, unbelievably well documented, isn't it? I think that's the other reason for doing
it. The site of a medieval mystery play.
Mystery plays were performed here at May Day, I think. It was a May Day ritual. Mm. And also the Skinner's Well, which is nearby in Skinner's Row.
I used to go to school with a family called the Skinners. They were really tough.
Here we go. So number 18 Farringdon Lane. There's a little plaque. It says Clark's Well.
Now, John, you've got me completely lost in a maze of streets. We're looking at a plethora of wells that I've never even heard of, or if I have heard of them, I don't know where they are. So where are we heading now?
Well, we won't go down this alleyway, I don't think.
That says Sparfields Lane.
Yeah. That was where the Sparfields were.
I think we should walk down there.
Should we? I think, yeah. But I think we might find ourselves in a locked park. What they've done there is they've made this park, they've sort of public arted it. But they sort of try to draw out some of its heritage. Sparfields was a place of sort of congregation, and there'd be meetings, sort of early Chartist meetings and various radical movements that were around in the late 18th century. Here we go, here we are at the gates of a locked park. You can see here, what we're looking at the back there of Spar Green Estate, which is where we're going to go actually.
Is that tower block with the aircraft hangar type accoutrement on the roof?
Yeah, exactly.
So is that on City Roads?
That is on St John Street. Actually, this might negate the need to walk around there. That's the site of one of the pleasure gardens, one of the springs, so the spa, and there was the New London Spa was there. And it's reflected in some of the names of the blocks there. This new, because it was, it was sometimes referred to as New Tunbridge Wells in its age. Because Tunbridge Wells was obviously a very popular resort, especially in the 18th century. So that was at one point christened New Tunbridge Wells. And if you go over there to sort of, what is it? It's a post-war estate, isn't it? And you'll see Tunbridge Wells House. And lots of the names of the blocks have sort of water themes to them. I know, I think what we should do is, should we go to the London Spa? That was the New London Spa. Should we go to the London Spa?
Okay, I'm not sure I know the difference.
Uh-huh. Well, one's on the old Ducking Pond Fields. Let's go and explore it.
Wilmington Square, by any chance?
In Wilmington Square.